Now, to show our gratitude, we're not going to be like the other guys and jerk you around and bullshit you. We're going to tell you the truth.
Shane Douglas is the man who ignites the new flame of the sport of professional wrestling. The era of the franchise. The era of the ECW.
And welcome to the most extreme three-way dances that you'll experience out there in the podcast universe. I'm JT here on a very somber night. I bring in my co-host, Jonifer, the two of them. How are you guys doing?
Look at this morose motherfucker right here. We're sad.
Very sad. We are on the heels, just hours ago, WrestleMania officially canceled. For all intents and purposes, canceled. Obviously, it's still happening, but not really. The three of us were planning on going. Sadly, we're not. And that's it. I don't think I'll say too much more about it. I don't know if you guys want to vent at all. Go ahead, have at it.
I'm just going to apply myself with alcohol and see if that does anything. John, what's your plan?
I don't have a plan. I don't want to go wah-wah and all that because, we got a lot of problems going on. So, let's go. Let's hit it.
All right. Speaking of small crowds and wild wrestling, we are going to talk ECW because here on this show, we are going through the history of ECW starting in February 1994. Over the last two episodes, we've done a lot of recapping of November to remember. We did the actual show itself, and then we did the Fallout. And now we have three installments of television that we're going to cover here tonight. It was November 29th, December 6th, and December 13th episodes of ECW television. And it's exciting because we're actually back to normalcy here. We had a couple, the episodes last week were the fallout from November, remember, so we didn't really have any live, any new content really to get into. But we'll break that tonight, thankfully. So here we go. November 29th, we fade up out in the streets. There's trash and junk strewn everywhere. Public Enemy struts up. Rocco rocks says they aren't here because they have to be because they want to be. They got their money, their crib, their hoes, and tag titles, and they're back where they belong, ready to face Taz and Sabu. They need to smell and taste blood in the air. They have survived on the streets their whole lives, and they're going to reach down their throats and pull hearts out. Grunge sings, or says, rockabye, baby, and then they walk off. So, any thoughts on this opening Public Enemy promo?
Yeah, I love we got our hoes and we got our belts. That's classic. And they used it before, the Rockabye Baby. That was a New Jack City pull, a classic there.
How many hoes do you think Public Enemy's got?
Oh, they got a lot. And
they got
and
a
Philly,
lot of hoes?
Philly, trust me, in Philly in the 90s, swimming with hoes.
They got hoes in a lot of different area codes.
another one of those intense promos that I like. It's good to see them looking trim and with their hose. It's a good start to the show.
We're not done with them yet because we get highlights of the whole Taz and Sabu Malenko's match from last week, and then we go back to Public Enemy. They're still walking by the subway tracks. We see more junk and a busted up broken down car. They say this is the perfect place to train and run down what they're going to do once they get going and all the different weapons they're going to use to train, and they say at Holiday Hell they're going to kick some ass. So pretty basic second act there. We then get our opening animation, and Joey Styles in the house inside the Eagles' nest says the national media is having a field day with what Public Enemy did last week. We get some neat photos from different various publications about covering what Public Enemy had done. Paul E. Dangerously has avoided comment all week as well, and on December 17th, we find out that Public Enemy will take on Sabu and Taz in the main event of Holiday Hell, and 911 will face the Pitbulls on that show, and Shane Douglas will defend his title against Ron Simmons. And that brings us to our opening match.
Accompanied by
Anthony Armento. Fun match in this opener as the great Dean Malenko takes on Too Cold Scorpio. Streams crossing. We get highlights from last week when Scorpio became television champion. Malenko has Jason with him, and we have an hour time limit on this match. Crowd is fired up. He gets a feeling out, basic grappling. Joey gives out some point scores to compare to amateur wrestling. Malenko works the arm, but gets drilled with a nice sidekick that drives him to the floor. After a break, Malenko is working Scorp down to the mat, grabs a front face lock. We get some good amateur stuff. Well executed, crisp. Malenko then whips Scorpio across the ring with the body scissors, and the crowd pops for that in admiration. We reset with a lockup. Scorpio works the arm, grinding Malenko down, but Dean twists into a leg lock as we're battling on the mat. Scorpio breaks that up and now focuses on the shoulder. Still on the mat, Scorpio gets a couple of near falls and stomps away. Slams Malenko, heads up top, and does a nice big splash for a close near fall. Malenko cuts him down, gets twisted into the cloverleaf, but Scorpio hangs tough and forces a rope break. Malenko stomps away, goes to work on the knee with a shin breaker and a leg lock. Scorpio breaks out. They tumble to the floor where he slams Malenko hard on the wood. Scorpio hits a backbreaker, rolls back in, and comes flying back out with a tope, but he whiffs and crashes to the floor. Back inside, Malenko hits a tight leg lariat for one as Scorpio has landed near the ropes. They end up on the buckles, and Scorpio hits a great super victory roll for two, which is a really sweet-looking move. Malenko then blocks a Frankensteiner. Scorpio slams hard on his head. Scorpio recovers, floats over the backdrop, and heads up top, but he comes up empty on a moonsault. Malenko then follows with a neckbreaker and gets the win and the television title. And the crowd was really into that, and so was I. It was very unique for this setting. A lot of hard, crisp mat work and limb work sprinkled in with some high spots late in the match. And the finish was great, too. It was clean. It was hard fought. And it was a good, solid win from Malenko, who will now be, we'll see if he's a dominant TV champion, but he's a great TV champion for ECW to have. And the crowd appreciated it. You could tell, like, they knew that they witnessed something really cool here tonight. So I went 3.25 star on this one, Jenny.
3.25 star. Okay. I liked it, too. I wasn't quite as high as you on it. I did like the mat wrestling, although I felt like it got a little repetitive maybe towards the end. They did good when they broke it up, you know, a little bit. And I liked the cool victory roll up off the top for Too Cold. That, like you said, looked really cool. And I was kind of expecting him to keep his belt here. I was surprised. But I'm not mad at it, although I do wonder what we're going to, you know, see Jason's reaction to this win. You know, if he gets quite jealous, I can see that being fun to watch. So I went 2.5 stars.
I really like this. I'll split the difference and give it a 3. It was a total 180 from the typical ECW tables, ladders, and chairs. And Joey really got it over. He was comparing it to like a Japanese wrestling match. And he had one of the best in that. Malenko was a master at working a body part, just old school mat based, and I loved it. And Jason's reaction at the end, and I thought that that Malenko, when he was like folding up the belt, that he was gonna do like an Andre. I surrender the TV title to Jason, like he did to Ted DiBiase, but he kept it. I was surprised.
Yeah, and it's good too. Like, this was a good way to keep it on a heel in Jason's stable, but get it off of Jason since that kind of run its course. So now it's on a legit wrestler, and they just use Scorpio as this quick one-week transition champion, which is fine because he's been embroiled in all this. So I like the way they went about it. I think the belt's much better on Malenko than on Jason. Now, this explains why Malenko had the belt, by the way. I'm guessing this was taped before that because now they just never explained it. He just had the title that I don't remember with no explanation. Yeah. But so I guess that helps with that too. All right, so really good opener to get us going. Joey's back in the nest. He says Chad Austin's headed to the ring, and that takes us away from our scheduled visit with Cactus Jack and Kevin Sullivan. Austin is in the ring talking about being dumped by his manager, partners, and friends, and all the scumbags in the crowd. So instead, he's headed to the greatest promotion of all time, Smoky Mountain Wrestling, where the wrestlers, the city, and the fans are better. He shits on Philadelphia, shits on the ECW fans, and Joey says, you know what, we're done, until Shane Douglas comes out. Douglas says, He has to hear this crap as he gets ready for his match. Shane says, "Smokey, what?" and laughs. And Austin says, "SMW had a message for Shane," and he slugs him in the head. Shane comes battling back and beats the piss out of Austin as our match starts. And that is Shane Douglas versus Chad Austin. Douglas slugs away, hits a forearm and belly to back suplex. Douglas grinds on his face, smashes him with a delayed vertical, and then grinds his face again, forcing him to say ECW is number one, and the crowd is in love with this right now. Shane grabs the belt and smashes Austin in the head with it, grabs the mic and says that he can take that lesson to all those rednecks and tell them ECW and the franchise rule. So no finish. It's all just about, you know, taking a dump on Smoky Mountain and getting the fans to pop. So this is a fine segment, letting Shane continue to be the guy that speaks on behalf of ECW and its fans. And Austin's just kind of being the avatar for anti-ECW guys, I guess, but fine enough.
Yeah, this is also real good. Just the way Austin got punked out at the end, and it was like you know, a little kid saying uncle, and ECW is number one, and Shane was just kind of just kind of rubbing his forearm across his head, just punking him out. It was beautiful, and it was strange. I guess they changed the stipulations of the match on the fly, where the ref all of a sudden was just grabbing a mic and I was like, they didn't announce that this was an I Quit match or whatever. I didn't know what was going on, but that's typical EC dub for you.
Yeah, I enjoy watching Chad Austin be a jackass. I don't know, it's entertaining. Shane, I don't know where I'm at. Shane, I mean, it was fine. It was fine. He was bullying, you know, and it was what it was. I'm good with it.
Really, you're getting upset about bullying at ECW now? That's where
it's fine. Okay. No, I'm fine with it. Like I'm saying, it's fine. Like, I mean, I have no opinion. I'm neutral on this subject.
He was defending the great ECW fans of Philly. You know, Austin was putting them down. And
yeah.
Was raising the South flag. This is like an East South thing.
And we've said it a million times too, that, like, at least I have. This is what the audience wants at this point, and that's what they get.
Yeah.
Like, I mean,
yeah,
they love this. Yeah, they are eating it up because they're making them part of the group, right? You're talking about us like this, you know, like, and he means everyone in that building. So they're really building an identity with their fans, which comes into play because the ECW fan loyalty is like none other during this time. We had a little promo package on Douglas, including some of his classic promo work. Joey then talks about the big Public Enemy versus Sabu and Taz match and says Public Enemy made a big-time enemy in Sabu. We then head back to November to Remember for highlights on all this started before our next match. Public Enemy ready to fight the power, taking on Cactus Jack and Kevin Sullivan. Jenny, how excited were you for this one?
So excited. Mm-hmm. Can't wait to see my boo.
Public Enemy come out. They dance for a big-time match as they gear up for Holiday Hell 2. Sullivan is back in ECW, reunited with Cactus. We clip ahead to all four brawling wildly, including Sullivan using a shovel and Johnny Grunge gushing blood. Sullivan keeps smashing Rock with a frying pan, and Rock shrugs it off and uses a crutch. Styles takes a dig at the Faces of Fear as Cactus uses part of a ladder and almost wipes out the front row. And that is the Three Faces of Fear, the Kevin Sullivan Butcher Avalanche group there, WCW at the time. All four are brawling in and out of the ring as weapons are flying. Grunge puts Jack on the railing. Rockhouse smacks him with a chair. We keep clipping ahead, but it's just more of the same bloody weapons brawling. Joey gets in a funny line naming all the weapons and says, "These are a few of our favorite things." That made me laugh. Back inside, Jack gets a double arm DDT on Rocco as Joey notes that Jack's battles with Kevin and Dave on TBS. Jack hits another one and is smiling and doing his finger guns, but Kevin looks pissed. Jack spits on the ECW title and Sullivan smacks him with it for the DQ. Mikey shows up as promised and beats on Sullivan. Sullivan and Public Enemy beat up Mikey and Cactus with a vicious assault using wild chair shots. Mikey keeps trying to fight back, but he gets mauled. Public Enemy puts Cactus on a table. Taz comes out and makes a save. Sabu comes in as well. They take care of business. Taz hits a super belly-to-belly suplex on Rocco, and Sabu puts Grunge on a table, grabs a chair, sets it up top, and hits a leg drop through Grunge in a wild spot. The crowd is all fired up for that, and it's a real wild scene as we close out the episode. So this is all clipped up, but it was pretty sick and fun from what we saw. A lot of weapons, a lot of blood, and then the big spot at the end. Plus, it pays off Mikey's promise that if Sullivan turned on Cactus, he'd kick his ass. Public Enemy really came off as lethal, And Jack and Mikey is a lovable odd couple. This is good stuff. I really like the Wild Post match. I went 3 stars, John.
Yeah. How about, I know Jenny loved the Sully's red tights.
I did, yes.
And it matched the same color as that broken red shovel that he was using for most of the match. that half a shovel, it didn't look that devastating, but it was just more of a visual. And
he made Cactus up for it with the frying pan.
Yeah, and then Cactus had like half of a ladder or something. This was what a delight. And then the frying pans. They brought out the whole Home Depot on this one.
There's something about the way Kevin Sullivan wields a weapon that makes it look fucking brutal. Like most frying pans and shots do look like that, but there's something about the way he does it that just makes me cringe. Like, it looks so devastating. He does the same thing with those chair shots to Mikey. Oh my God. I was so torn because I love Mikey too. And he was so brave and beautiful trying to come to Cactus's defense and then just got his brain smashed in by Kevin. This reminds me of some of the earlier matches that we watched with Kevin Sullivan with the Bruise Brothers, and, you know, just crazy and nobody's really tagging anybody. It's just, you know, it's just mayhem and bloody, and it took me back to those early days of our podcast, and I got a little wispy about it.
It's a night full of wisp. For sure.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so this ended up being a pretty good episode, honestly, with everything they loaded in here.
Yeah.
Best match for me was Scorpio Malenko.
Yes.
I went Public Enemy. Okay. With Jack.
I mean, it's they're close.
Yeah.
Quibble. Worst match easily, Douglas and Austin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Best moment for me, I went to, I had Malenko winning the title. That was a cool pop. And then Cactus and Sullivan, that whole post-match stuff with the big crazy spot and everything going on.
Yeah, Kevin's turn, very predictable, but fun to watch anyway.
Even though it doesn't add like anything to the devastation, the spot where Sabu placed like the chair on the top rope.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it's kind of silly because it doesn't really add to the dive, but it was just a good visual.
But he pulled it off. Yeah. I was like, what is he doing?
And the crowd popped for it too, because of course we're dumb wrestling fans. We don't realize that it's the same impact, but it was just it was a great visual.
Just cooler. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. The most 90s, I went with the reference to Smoky Mountain.
I went with Chad Austin's jean jacket.
I went with just Joey bring up the Japanese wrestling during the Scorpio Shooter match.
All right, Stock Rising. I went Public Enemy. I went Malenko, and I went Douglas.
Malenko definitely.
Malenko, I guess. Sabu too, just because he's my favorite.
And then Stock Falling was just Stone Cold Chad Austin for me.
Yeah, sorry, Chad.
Chad.
And final grade. This is a really good episode. It's hard to really argue. We had two, borderline or over 3-star matches, and then the Douglas stuff was fun. We didn't waste any time. A great Public Enemy promo. So I went 7.5 out of 10 on this episode.
Yeah,
look at you.
An 8. I got an 8. That was one of the.
Oh my
ones.
God!
It's a great 45 minutes 8? Of wrestling TV right there.
Oh my
Come on!
God.
All right.
Fuck it. I'll give it an 8 too.
Very good.
I don't fall to peer pressure. I want to see your notes. I bet you got like a 6 in your notes. Come on.
I got a full 6.5 in my notes, but.
I got it out of her.
You got that 6.5 out of her?
I can't keep it from you, Johnny.
It's all good.
All right. Let's move along then to December 6th. We're getting perilously close to the end of 1994 here. We open up with Shane Douglas and Sensational Sherry back.
What?
They walk to the ring. They give a big hug. They're wide smiles. Douglas has his MILF back. Styles says Sherry's no longer with Ric Flair, and she's back with the franchise. So they're making it like she's here to stay. Shane.
Come on. She's not that much older than Shane.
That's true. Yes.
It's old enough. I mean, they basically play it up like a Mrs. Robinson situation with these two. I think it's how it's set up in my eyes.
No, she's definitely his side piece.
No, he's like in love with her. He's been talking about her nonstop, so she fucking left. He can't quit her. Telling you, Stifler's mom. No, that's exactly what it is.
I see a wedding ring on his finger, like in the next episode. So, just saying.
Oh man, spoiler.
Sorry.
All right, let's move along. Douglas yells at Todd Gordon, and then we cut to our opening animation. We return, and Douglas talks up Sherry. We cut to the nest, where he explains that Joey explains that Steve Austin is injured. He was supposed to be here to team with Douglas tonight, but he can't compete. And that was legitimate. That was the injury that ended up getting him fired from WCW, the bicep tear, around this time. So that is a real injury. That is why he is not here in ECW. Sherry is with Douglas. She's putting him over, says he's a man of his word, and that he had said he'd bring in the only person in WCW they respected. The crowd chants, "Dick Flair sucks," as Douglas is eating it up. Joey pops in and says Douglas is so confident the fans will be happy with the replacement. If they can't, they'll get a full refund halfway through the show, so they'll get the first half for free. Douglas says WCW is filled with entertainers and not wrestlers, but he's sure the fans will be happy with what he's done tonight. He wants someone just as good as him, but because Austin is hurt, he had to go elsewhere. Sherry says she's never let Douglas down before, and she reveals the replacement for Austin is his former tag team partner in the Hollywood Blondes, Brian Pillman. Pillman comes out in his Blondes gear. The crowd is hyped. Style says, "I don't think there'll be any refund requests tonight. Maybe one or two, but not too many." Joey's back in the Eagles' nasty recast what we just saw, and then says we hear a good hardcore phone line promo from Shane Douglas, Pillman, and Sherry, which I enjoyed quite a bit. I thought that was well done. Douglas does his usual self-promotion, gushes over Pillman, the Blondes, and talks about the WCW clashes. Douglas says Scorpio flies like no man except Pillman. Pillman's all fired up. He says Austin is a weak link in the Blondes, and he's out, and the SOBs. Left behind in the restroom where he stuffed his face on the toilet. He says that they will give the boys from the hood a brush with greatness. Douglas takes his usual shots at Flair, says tonight they take the torch back where it belongs. Sherry has clearly been putting that WCW money to good use, by the way, based on how young and fixed up she looks. Jeffy got some, I don't know if Botox was a thing in 1994, but whatever was going on, she's cleaned up quite a bit. All right, so what did you guys think of this whole opening stuff in the ring and then the hardcore phone line promo, Jenny?
It was a little... It's a little choppy, you know, because you're going from like the promo to Joey, and then you know it was okay, but I wish they had just sort of stayed with one thing, but I guess not. They were trying to, I don't know, build it up or something, but I didn't know that the injury was the reason that Austin was not there. Yeah. So thank you for clearing that up for me. And I like Brian Pillman, so I'm excited about that. Interested to see where Sherry's loyalties lie.
Do you guys know anybody that would have taken them up on the offer and got the refund? Hmm. Probably because they needed the money right away.
They can watch the show for free?
All I got.
That's it? That's all you got on that. What do you think of Pillman as the replacement?
A great reaction from the crowd. I mean, think of Pillman. Just look on the hair, the muscles, the moves. He was a shit. Yeah. And the crowd reacted to him.
I mean, I think in a way, too, like, it's funny to look back now and feel this way, but you could argue in 94, he was a bigger get for them than Austin was. I mean, they were equal in the Blondes, but I think Pillman was, I mean... I guess they're about equal, but like it's not right now. You look at it and you think, "Oh, the drop from Austin Pillman's a big one." But I think at that point it was equal or a little bit better for them.
At that time, definitely, yeah. Very close.
So it's not like it's a huge.
It's also
drop-off.
A little, yeah, but it's also a little weird from like Shane's point of view because he's done everything in his power to call out everybody else except for, you know,
it does make a couple of people.
You know, it makes him look like a little bit of an asshole. You know what I'm saying? Like he is. It. I think it kind of plays into my delusional thing too.
Yeah, but. I'm with the delusional thing. I think. I think it's good.
And you know, his trust so Cherry is suspect. Like,
he loves her.
Yeah.
She broke him in.
Yeah.
All right. We go backstage where Ron Simmons and Too Cold Scorpio are back. They're hyped to take someone to the hood tonight. Scorpio says Douglas knows nothing about the project other than driving 180 miles an hour through them. Simmons is pissed as usual, talks about Douglas not knowing anything about the hood or the projects, talks up his college career being the first black champion. He'll put Douglas's ass down and put an end to him. He doesn't want his soul, just his ass, and he knows how to beat a man. Scorpio mocks Austin for getting hurt, says he was too scared, says Sherry had to bail him out. He says Pillman ain't flown high till he faces Scorpio. And Simmons says, yeah, Scorpio's the best flyer, and Austin got punked out. He says Pillman has guts, even though he knows Simmons will put a beating on him. God, Ron Simmons continues to come out of nowhere and be awesome since I never remember shit show. But I really love this promo, Jenny.
You can give your soul to God, just give your ass to me.
That was an all-timer. I think Johnny said that at cheerleaders last weekend.
Yeah, I bet. I'm putting it on my fucking gravestone.
I gave my soul to somebody. Yeah.
Give that.
The
ass
only
to
thing
me.
I might have only heard that like maybe referred to once or twice with Simmons. Like that's called the Jicks. They don't call it the projects. I think I only heard that about maybe once or twice. The Jicks. So it's not exactly a popular term.
Yeah,
that was
news to me. I just figured I was out of the loop on that one. So.
Maybe more hood qualified could educate us more, but I rarely heard that.
That was my white privilege.
Oh, God.
So you guys continue to impress by Simmons' turnaround?
Oh, Simmons is tremendous, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a get for them to land him, and then he looks so shaky, and now all of a sudden if he ends up turning into this like top-level talker and worker, it's a big boon for them. So we'll see how it continues to play out. We go to a break. Joey welcomes us back to the stage, and we get that big dream tag match. Scorpio and Ron Simmons, Shane Douglas and Brian Pillman. Douglas and Pillman are in the ring. Scorpio and Simmons chug out. Set for highlights here. Shane hides near the photographers and jumps Simmons as he hits the ring. Shane batters Ron outside. Scorpio works over Pillman. Pillman gets knocked to the floor. Scorpio hits a baseball slide and knocks him down. Sherry protects Pillman with a chair. Simmons batters Douglas in the ring, uses his power to whip him around and beat on him. Simmons works the back, but drops his head and eats a swinging neck breaker. Douglas hits a vertical suplex and chokes away. Simmons goes low and makes the tag. Scorpio gets cracked with the right hand. Pillman tags in to get to work. Scorpio rams Pillman to the buckle, gets a high cross body for two, and then works the leg. Simmons tags back in, and we reset with him and Pillman. Pillman plays some mind games, but Simmons shrugs them off and slugs away and murders Pillman with a spinebuster. Pillman goes for the tag, but Douglas pieces out. Pillman rolls outside and they regroup. We clip ahead where Simmons and Douglas are resetting after an awkward exchange. Douglas takes him over with strikes and a gut-wrench suplex. Pillman and Douglas start the double team. They quick tag, keep Simmons grounded. We clip ahead again where Douglas is trying for a tombstone on Shane, but Scorpio reverses it, and Douglas falls on top for two. Pillman tags in and works the midsection. Scorpio ends up on the apron. Pillman dropkicks him to the floor, fakes a plancha before whiffing on an axe handle. Scorpio shoots Pillman to the rail, hits a missile dropkick for two back inside, and we clip again. Pillman wants a test of strength with Simmons. Simmons predictably dominates until Pillman goes to the eyes and then bites him. Simmons catches Pillman on a charge, puts him on the top rope by his neck. Simmons dodges a leap and then cuts Pillman down with a clothesline. We jump ahead again where Douglas and Pillman are working over Simmons' back, double teaming and tagging in and out. Simmons comes back with a double clothesline and tells Scorpio to go up top. Simmons slams Douglas and Scorpio tries a top rope splash but eats knees. Douglas works the midsection and we clip again where Pillman is now battering the guts of Scorpio. Pillman hangs Scorpio across the top rope. Him and Douglas do some more double teaming. Douglas hits a pancake and Pillman grabs an abdominal stretch. We clip ahead again where Douglas and Pillman are double stun gun on Scorpio for two. And then we cut again and Scorpio is mounting a comeback but Pillman takes him down, tags Douglas as they keep focusing on the back and the neck. Douglas comes up empty on a blind cross body. Scorpio hits a spin kick. We clip ahead and Pillman is in control of Scorpio, but Scorpio blocks a superplex, sends Pillman crashing to the mat. Scorpio tries a missile dropkick, but Pillman cracks him with a dropkick of two, of his own for two. Douglas tags in and Scorpio starts to punch and chop away, but Shane hits a belly-to-belly, showboats before covering, and for some reason, Sherry puts Scorpio's foot on the rope to break the pin. We clip ahead again, and Scorpio dropkicks the ref by accident. Pillman knocks down Simmons. Sherry heads up top and clocks Shane with her high heel, and Simmons is acting like it's a miscue, but Sherry's preening. We clip ahead again, and Simmons is cleaning house on both men. He hits Shane with a power slam and gets the win over the champion. Pillman goes after Sherry and tells Douglas what happened. Shane gives Sherry some shit, and then realizes she has a picture of Ric Flair on her chest. As Joey says, this was all a setup by Ric Flair. The crowd shits on Flair, and Shane just buries Sherry with a pile driver. Joey says Flair doesn't have the guts to come to Philly himself. Douglas says he's seen a lot of sluts in his life, but never seen such a piece of shit like Flair send a woman to do his job. The crowd ate that one up. Good finish. A really fun match, even with the clipping. It was smooth and all four meshed well, and it was a better showing for Simmons, for sure, than November was. Scorpio selling was good, and although Douglas and Pillman made for a good, pretty good team. And the finish was good with Simmons getting the win. I wasn't too crazy about the Sherry stuff here, but we can talk about that in a minute. And Douglas keeps his gimmick up, of course. So I went 3 stars, Johnny, on this one.
Yes, me too. I liked early when Simmons was dominating Pillman, and Pillman went for the tag, and Shane was like, oh, fuck that, Shane refused, because Simmons was on fire. And it was a great mix. Everybody got their the offense in. And then, yeah, with the ref bump and the Sherry stuff, it was a little wonky. Not one of the best. It kind of came out of nowhere with Sherry putting the Scorpio's foot on the ropes. So.
Came out of nowhere? Are you serious right now? I mean, which who believed that Sherry was really back with Shane?
I did. Yeah.
You did?
Just for a night. I think it felt a little... it felt a little forced, this one. Like, she comes in and turns on him right away, and then the Flair thing on her chest. Like, I've been okay with all of the calling out of Flair and the shitting on WCW because of, like, the loyalty that they're building and Douglas being delusional. This felt like no one's actually going to believe Flair sent Sherry here to turn on. Like, it felt like a little too forced, you know what I mean? Like, I'm fine with him continually calling him out and calling him out and calling him out. Like, that's cool, but I don't know. This felt like a little goofy.
Yeah, no, the picture on the chest was dumb. That was...
Yeah.
Because you couldn't even see it barely, especially in non-HD the 20 whatever years old film. But
yeah, I had no idea. That was kind of dumb. Didn't say yeah. It. I wouldn't have known. Yeah, but yeah. She puts this sweater on, like over her dress, before like kind of in the like clips of, because this is a mess to watch because they keep clipping in and out. So you get kind of disoriented with that. She puts on the sweater and I'm just like, this is all like, isn't it all obvious? Like, to me, I think Shane looks stupid for believing that she is really back and acting shocked when she turns. Like, and of course, I don't believe that Ric Flair sent her there with that on her chest. I believe she's just fucking with him and he's stupid.
Yeah.
So.
But it's like, why is she screwing with him? Like, that didn't, like, I get... It just wasn't.
She can't, because all he talks about is fucking Ric Flair. So why the fuck not? I mean, he's the one who asks for it. He keeps asking, begging for the attention. So she's fucking with him. Because she's nice. Cool like that.
He's in love with her.
I'm just saying, like, yeah, but he's an asshole.
Not to her. He did nothing to her. She left him for WCW. It's not like he threw her out.
But he is in general, so it's fine. It's fine. And she's evil. She's wicked. That's why I love her. She's fucked up. It's not about
doing this to poor Shane after she took his virginity.
Yes.
And Joey was slow on the uptake, too, because even when after she hit with the heel, Joey's like, oh, it was a miss.
He tries to act like it was. I'm like, come on.
That's because he's like their kid. He's sad to see them fight.
Yeah. I did like this match, though. I loved that Simmons won the match. I thought that was wonderful. And I thought Too Cold looked pretty good in it, too.
Yeah.
After losing to Jason earlier.
He's quickly becoming like a really good TV workhorse.
I mean,
workhorse.
Not Jason, but...
Monica, yeah. He's really becoming a really good TV workhorse for them. Like, he just keeps churning out these good matches. He's like the perfect guy for them. He's not gonna be a massive star, but he's a big enough name and really good in the ring, and him and Simmons is a good team. Like, this is a good pairing that they got going right now. I'm curious to see how long it plays out, but I've really dug Simmons since November. Remember,
one more thing. When Shane had her up in that pile driver, great legs. Sherry was working on the legs,
and she sold that too. She looked dead.
Putting that WCW money to work.
Hell yeah.
Working out on that Turner gym. Joey's back in the Nasty's Hyping Holiday Hell 2. running down some of the card and reveal some wrestlers who'll be there. We also get a fun clip of Dean Malenko training in his academy. We go backstage where Ron Simmons is there again. He says he's going to let his hands do the fighting, not the words. He says Shane has guts. He knows every time they get in the ring, he'll put him on his back. He mangles a quote he attributes to Native Americans, and then goes into his rant about the hood again.
Every time they take a good beating.
He's like, he was all over the fucking place with that one, that anecdote. He says every time they get in the ring, he will burn Shane's ass. He can give his soul to God because his ass belongs to Simmons. More great stuff from Ron, who's just all fired up. He touched on something deep inside all of a sudden, like this switch flipped and here he is. He's digging deep. Paul got him lit up.
Yeah. Well, I wonder if, they held them back or they didn't let him go off in WCW.
I think that might be fueling him. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
He probably felt like he got kind of screwed and pushed out and whatever. He's like slumming it in fucking Philly for this thing. You know, so I think it's probably probably some realism, like fueling his anger. Like we'll see later.
They downgraded his promo skills and they just dismissed him. Yeah, but
I think he relied on that
he was a Florida State Seminole when he was quoting a Native American, "Pale face, take a good beating."
I just think he enjoys cursing during his promos, because he likes to
say,
"I'm gonna burn y'all ass."
Ass belong to me.
He's loving it.
I think he just really likes that, and he should.
Damn,
he's great at it.
All right, let's move along. Cactus Jack and Mikey Whipwreck are backstage. Cactus told Mikey that Sullivan couldn't be trusted, and he was right. As much as he was hurt, he also felt joy because Mikey was a man of his word. He came out to kick Sullivan's ass like he promised. Mikey is amazing in there. Cactus calls Sullivan a balding blonde baboon and says Mikey took it to the extreme. Cactus has never been prouder of anyone. I love this promo. It was like the proud older brother, Cactus Jack, with his little buddy. This was excellent stuff from Foley, as always.
His little bandage on his little forehead. Oh, it was a perfect touch. And then even just the way that Mikey like looks at the camera and his face, he's just like so sincere and adorable. And he loves Cactus so much. And he said, "You told me so, Cactus."
Yeah, I kicked his ass.
It's really good. Good stuff. These two are...
I love them.
Right together. All right, Public Enemy's outside a strip club. They say they're outside their paradise. Rock is holding a wad of cash. Talks about not knowing what happened to Philly. They found a great pizza place, but they got thrown out because they wouldn't take their checks. They talk about getting thrown out of more places and cover what happened during that Cactus and Mikey match, as well as what's going on with Sabu and Paul Lee. They took care of Terry Funk because they're problem solvers. Even with Taz and Sabu getting involved, they still won their belts back anyway. The people chanted for Sabu instead of them inside their own house that they built. The Day of Reckoning is December 17th, and they'll be breaking necks. He says Taz the Monkey Boy will be drinking bananas through a straw, and he'll pull his 46-inch thighs off his body and beat them with them. They head inside the club. Another great Public Enemy promo here.
I like how Rocco, he quoted that to Jason. So he threw Jason on the club. Like, "Oh, that's not my quote. That's a Jason. Jason said that Taz will be drinking bananas through a straw."
Hey, I remember when Jason called him Monkey Boy. Okay,
yeah. When he bit his
face. It was a great callback. It delighted me, and also delighted me the side wall of the strip club. Is it called Paradise, or is that just what they were calling it? I mean, I'm sure you guys know more about strip clubs in Philadelphia than I do. So,
most of the ones I've went to were Paradise. Yes,
they
could be called Paradise. Yeah, they could be called.
I will say that this effect that they're doing on these Public Enemy promos with the picture-in-picture, I don't know what to call it, but like the whole frame just swivels back and forth, and at first I did kind of like it, and then I just found it really distracting during this. So they could like kind of not do that anymore. That'd be great.
Well, that's what it is. I'm sorry.
Yep. Well,
I tell you to write to the director, but I don't think they'll get the message.
Yeah.
46-inch thighs made me laugh. 46.
That was funny.
His thighs made me laugh. All right, Paulie is in the nest with Joey, and he says he's always been a guy that gets united against and runs down guys that took a shot at wiping them out. Public Enemy's at the top of the heap, and no one's been able to stop them, but there are two things Rock and that fat piece of crap Johnny Grunge have forgotten about, Sabu and Taz. indestructible team, and number two, they forgot that Paul is capable of is done in the past. Classic Paul stuff to hard sell Holiday Hell here.
Oh, straight fire from my boo. I get to call him that now, I think. Paulie, I also wrote down fat piece of crap Johnny Grunge because that was hilarious. And he was wonderful.
Paulie was very sweaty, very greasy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Friggin' dripping on a suit with his gross hair and stuff. And
How dare you, sir? And
you saw that Joey's eyes lit up when he said, you'll curse the pimp that impregnated your mother. even Joey was shocked.
What a wordsmith.
God. All right. That wraps up this episode. So let's do some awards. Best match was only one, really. So Pillman and Douglas versus Simmons and Scorpio.
Yep.
Best moment, I went with the reveal of Pillman, and then that Simmons spine buster on Pillman was gross. He really crushed him with it.
No, man, it's Sherry's turn.
I think it was a Simmons promo.
Yeah.
When he said, pale face, take a good beating.
Most 90s, I went with Scorpio's Windbreaker and the Wrestling Hotline. Very 90s.
Yeah, the Wrestling Hotline. Oh, God.
Stock Rising, I went with Simmons, Scorpio, Douglas, and Pillman.
Simmons, definitely.
Sherry, definitely.
I give her stock falling.
What?
That bitch did.
Yeah, that wasn't one of her better performances.
Yeah. Y'all are crazy. Y'all just can't see. I didn't really have anybody falling on this episode, really.
No, it was a ton. Everyone was really good.
Everybody, yeah.
All right, final grade. I went 6.5 out of 10. That was a little slightly behind because we only had the one match. I don't know. How did you guys feel about the clipping, by the way? We didn't really get into that. Like, it's probably good because it would have been too long. It seemed like a really long match. Did it affect it for you, or did you feel like we saw what we needed to see and we're good?
No. Like, I'm of two minds about it. Like, I thought it was very difficult to watch, like I said, with all the clipping. But also, it did kind of run long anyway, just in general. So maybe I'm glad for the clipping.
Yeah.
Yeah, they just cut to the chase and they put all the important stuff in it. But sometimes it's good, especially in a tag team match, to just let it play out and see the whole thing. But this is meant for, you know, Bang Bang TV.
Yep, and they had to get other stuff in. It would have been too long. So
yeah, the angles. Yeah.
All right, let's move to our last episode of the night, December 13th, 1994.
Hey, wait, we didn't get to rate it.
Oh, 6.5.
Okay, 6.5 for me then.
Sorry.
I gave it a 7.
All right.
See?
Johnny liked it. Lucky. All right. Now are we good?
Yeah, we can go now.
December 13th, 1994, opened the recap of that whole Dream Tag Saga. Then we head inside the showers where Shane Douglas is talking about the importance of being a champion.
It's a good time. It's a good time to go into the shower now. You have to make sure it's be clean and wash. And
that's true.
Hey, last time you and I, John, talked about somebody in the shower, it did not go that well. So maybe this is better.
I might start podcasting from the shower in these Corona times.
Yeah.
All right. Shane says wrestling is the last bastion where men can prove things on his own. Talks about ancient temples where the top athletes of the day would venture. There were no windows, but fans knew they were part of great sports, just like ECW fans do today. He's in his locker room where only greatness ventures and eagles fly, and he stands here, and on Saturday night, one standard stands above the rest. On that night, Simmons could beat him from pillar to post, just like he did to Vader and Ric Flair. Flair might not like what he's been saying, and that may be wearing on him. His hair is thinning, his eyes are getting baggier, his father time is eating away at him. Douglas apologizes to Flair for being what he can never be again. The man to stay on the top of the mountain is a franchise. Flair and Sherry stood in the Siena Towers, and he sent her to send a message. Flair could have just called, because he would answer, unlike him. Just like the voters sent Democrats a message in the election, he sent a message right back to Flair and Ted Turner. Be a man and answer on your own. Don't send a woman or hide behind a boardroom or retirement. He isn't the man that let an entertainer shove a handkerchief in his face. This is the last time he mentioned Flair by name, because the fire is gone. We always hear the ECW fans chant Flair is dead, and if Flair lays in his bed at night, he hears Shane's voice haunting him. Flair is out of life until he's the man enough to answer the phone. WCW has spawned one man that'll show up and fight, and that's Ron Simmons, but he'll come up short on Saturday. The franchise's dressing room is sacred. After the match, he'll sit there and chuckle as everyone will see why he's the franchise and ECW is now Extreme. He's taking ECW where no promotion has gone before, and he'll do it with the entertainment or clowns. As he'll do without entertainment or clowns. He's done it with blood, sweat, and tears, and he'll prove again that he is the best as always. And when it's all done, Simmons will just be fodder in another stepping stone, because this Saturday, Douglas soars with the Eagles. Johnny, how did you feel about this wet, showery promo?
I liked it. I did like the that was a little different, the locker room and the shower. Although it seems like the heads were a little close together. They weren't exactly 6 feet apart. It's gonna be tough to keep clean in that shower. But I really doubt though that's the last time he'll mention Flair's name. That remains to be seen. I'm not betting on that one.
Yeah. Yeah, I can only hope so. You know, partly I was happy to hear that from him, and then also kind of like not believing him. And then I was just kept getting distracted by things like his wedding ring, like I mentioned earlier, which I've never seen him wear before. And then all of a sudden he had it on. So that distracted me quite a bit. And then he like turns on the showers and it gets pretty weird towards the end, but it really just looks like he was making excuses mm-hmm. for everything and is like acting like anybody gave him attention when they clearly did not. So maybe he'll move forward and do something different from now on, hopefully.
So the wedding ring thing, I was looking up he was married. He got married on August 13th, 1999. Maybe he had a first marriage, but Wikipedia just mentions that one.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, yeah, it's well delivered, and it just depends.
It is well delivered.
Depends what you feel about the content, I guess, of it. I do think mm-hmm. these last 2 weeks I've been pretty pro Shane with these things. I think these last two maybe have gone a little further than we've needed to go. Like mm-hmm. he's never going to get this match with Flair. You know, it's not. This isn't going to pay off anything. I think with the big show coming, he would have been better suited to spend most of this promo on Simmons versus yeah. Flair. In a way, he's putting Simmons over, right, by saying he's the only guy who's got guts to actually show up, whereas Flair doesn't, which is good. But it's like a little too much now. Like we know, and I'm fine with him continuing to take shots. I just don't think we need a full, like, 15-minute fucking conversation about Flair at this point still.
Because yeah.
it's not going anywhere. He's not like mm-hmm. they kind of did it with Sherry, but like Flair himself is not coming. So at this point, you just got to figure out where this is going to go and how it's going to be. So, all right, we got our opening animation. Joey Styles welcomes us in and reminds us about Holiday Hell 2 and as well as a January tour of Florida coming up. Hopefully it doesn't get canceled. 9-1-1. Battles the Young Dragons in a handicap match to open things up. The crowd is already lathered for 9-1-1 before we even get going. He comes in and grabs both dragons, drops them with choke slams, and gets the quick win. Just seconds. Styles makes a trade deficit joke and takes a shit on Suzuki and Toyota. It says 9-1-1 got a win for the USA. He doesn't even need to carry a 2x4. Take a shot at Jim Duggan. Total destruction here. 9-1-1 wrecks them again after the match. Jenny, I went dud, but it was a fun moment.
Yeah, dud, but, you know, there's some choke slams and whatnot, so... It's all right.
Man, the Young Dragons, they kept their wigs, so that was a victory for them.
They're the old dragons by now. Sorry.
Yeah, they had nothing going on, those Young Dragons.
Nope.
Joey continues to hype Holiday Hell. He says 9-1-1's going in as an underdog for the first time when he battles the Pitbulls. Tommy Cairo's backstage. He's been rocking a bandana yeah. and
oh
a hat.
My
what a
God.
Look. A bandana and a hat. And he has a new manager. She's awkward, she's trashy, and she's a hot slice named Virgin Princess Angel.
And I'm in love.
The Me
Virgin
too.
Princess
awkward, trashy,
Angel.
Yeah. She hit all the checklists. She hits them all.
She says she's been saving herself for Tommy all these years, and this is, I mean, this comes off as like super creepy. Like it's like,
oh god,
like if Cairo had a kid. And her friend was this Princess Angel, and then she became 18, and then they got together. Like, that's what it felt like out there.
Oh, my God. I wonder where they got her. Is it just trashy, coked up, fake hands, everything? Definitely does not look like a virgin.
I guess
they got her right off the street in Philly, John.
Yeah.
I was not expecting that whatsoever. So I'm like, we cut from like, you know, bull crap to that. I was like, just lost my mind. Tommy looks like an insane person in the best way. I cannot wait to see where this goes. It's going to be awesome. I want her and Peaches to fight.
All right, we'll see. See where it goes.
A friggin' Cairo's gut just keeps protruding. He's one of the guys that you see at the gym that just, you know, do the hour of arms and nothing else. So.
It's all those peaches he's eating, putting on the weight. A lot of sugar, natural sugar.
So juicy.
Jason plugs the hardcore phone line. He'll be sharing his game plan for Holiday Hell 2. Ron Simmons is back. He's still tossing warnings at Douglas. Talks about his time at Florida State. He knows what it takes to be a champion, knows what it feels like, and it feels good. He wants it back. The title means more to him than anyone, to everyone, than their mothers do. He will be the man in ECW because that belt is wrestling. He's going to get that feeling back. He gave his word. He delivered in the tag match. He tried to drive Douglas through the ring, and he'll do it every time they face off. Douglas can take a beating, and he's got guts, but Simmons will just keep giving the beatings to him. He gives Douglas an old-fashioned ass whooping at Holiday Hell. Any thoughts on this Simmons promo, Jenny?
Good old-fashioned ass whooping is my only note, and that's all you need to know.
Anything from you, Johnny?
Not much. The Simmons just wants to be the man. That's it.
All right.
He's doing a better job of it than Shane to me.
Well, we know who you're rooting for, Holiday Hell.
I am.
Joey's back. He's hyping Holiday Hell. Navigates through the card. We get a video taking us through Sabu's recent brutal string of tribulations, including a freeze frame breakdown of him breaking his neck against Benoit, and then a lot of clips from the big tag match a few weeks ago. Public Enemy's backstage. They're still angry. Fans are turning on them. Todd Gordon's giving them shit, and now Paulie's talking up being extreme. But they're ready for Taz and Sabu, and they call out Paul for making cracks on their moms. They'll break tables, necks, and bones at Holiday Hell. Sabu and Taz won't be the only ones to calm them down because they're the Mac Daddies of Violence. And I thought this was usual quality stuff from Public Enemy.
Yeah, more good stuff with that stupid effect that I hate now.
He responded to Paulie's shot at the end, and he said, "Okay, our papa's a pimp. Said, gotta make a living." They both said, "Gotta make a living."
Joey talks about Holiday Hell some more. Paulie pops in. He calls out the pit bull, says they won't be any different than anyone else that's tried to challenge 911. He dials 911 on his phone, and that's all it takes to eliminate one, two, or even three men if Jason gets involved. Paul then turns his attention to the violence in society. Some parents think they can smack their kids and blame TV and movies for violence. He says a woman can bob at her husband and be found innocent because there wasn't enough evidence. And then he says his wife would find enough as evidence. Got a big penis. That makes Joey laugh. He believes violence in society comes down to money. If Public Enemy thinks they're tough enough to take Paul's money, he pulls out a huge wad, quotes cream, and then if they want the bills, they have to go through Taz and Sabu. I didn't think this was Paul's best work. It was kind of scattered and confused, but he hit some good points in there. And overall, we get the point across.
Nah, he got a shot on the Menendez brothers in there, talking about Beverly Hills. Spoiled Beverly Hills kids that killed their parents or whatever. He got a shot in on that before the Bobbitt reference. So he was running the current events scene at the time.
Running through it.
More hotness from Paulie. And I was distracted greatly by his button-down shirt, which was unbuttoned. And then he had some chest hair coming out. So, you know, I didn't really hear much about what he said.
Got you excited. I
did.
We see a tag match in progress, a mixed tag. It's Tommy Dreamer and some random females taking on Cairo and Princess Angel. Joey says if the male member of the winning team will face a Sandman if they win. And we have enough time tonight. We'll see that. But we don't really see
I wanted them to show this. That wasn't Peaches?
I don't think so.
They only showed it for like a bit second. I think it might have been Peaches.
It had to be. I don't know. There's no other women in there.
They teased us. They didn't show it, though.
It had to be her.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, there's no one else around.
Yeah.
Backstage, Mikey and Cactus are in the hallway. Mikey tells Cactus he owes him, and he's going to ask Todd Gordon for the rematch. Cactus says he could forgive Sullivan because he knew he was a worthless, heartless slug, and that Sullivan running out on him in WCW was a favor. He chastises Sullivan for not telling him he was going to beat the hell out of Hulk Hogan because maybe he would have stayed around and helped him. And he would have helped him turn on his goofy brother, too, and they could be having a barbecue. His kids would call him Uncle Kevin. Woman shows up and tells Cactus to watch what he's saying about her husband, and she's just as vicious as him. Sandman attacks Cactus from behind and beats him down with a cane. We hear in the background the Dreamer won the mixed tag, and Sandman says, "We gotta go." Interesting here, I thought, that they revealed Woman and Sandman. I'm sorry, Woman and Sullivan being married, because they definitely present like her and Sandman are banging. At least she's banging him if he's not banging her. That's how they're presented. So it was interesting to me that they pretty much out that Woman is Sullivan's wife here.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting that either. I was glad to see it, though. Like, it's... I'm kind of stuck on what you just said. Like, she was banging him. He wasn't banging her. All right, anyway. I feel like Mikey is a little bit pushed to the side, but I do like what they're doing by adding Sandman into this. Mm-hmm. So I'm good with it.
Yeah, him and Cactus could have... definitely the makings of a good feud between the two of them. Mm-hmm. And Cactus is good too, with the Uncle Kevin. I would have stuck around and helped you kill Hulk Hogan, basically. Anything there, Johnny?
Yeah. It was cool how they slipped Mikey in and out of that. Mikey says, "Oh, I'm going to talk to Commissioner Gordon." And then as soon as he got Cactus did his thing, and then to set up for to Sandman and him with Woman, all good.
It comes to Sandman with Woman. Take on Tommy Dreamer, who just earned this match. Sandman comes down for a dueling cane match, but Cairo's lingering around. He's got Dreamer's cane in his hand. Cairo smacks Tommy with the cane. Tommy recovers and dodges Sandman, backs him down with the cane until Cairo cracks him from behind. Sandman and Cairo both batter Dreamer until Cactus Jack comes out and makes a save. Cairo beats down Cactus, and he and Sandman lay waste to both men. Cactus is busted open, and the caning continues until Woman grabs a mic and eggs them on. What you guys think of this? Hot.
I was
hot caning action.
Yeah, I was just confused because it was like, what was Cairo doing in there? He was already in the ring, or
well, because the tag match had just ended, so he was hanging around.
Oh, there was that a continuation tag. from the mixed. There was a continuation from the mixed, yeah, and when Dreamer was trying to protect Cactus. That was a good spot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, you kind of joined the match like in progress, kind of. So, but yeah, just like a lot of hot caning action all around, pretty much. Some sick shots there. Cactus gets a couple of good ones. And I don't know. What do you guys think about Cactus and Dreamer together?
Well, it's like an uneasy alliance. Like, they're kind of teaming out of, like, mutual hatred. You know, they came out because Cactus had just gotten attacked by Sandman, so I think there's a reason he even came out there.
Yeah, I think both Dreamer's poor substitute for Mikey, but okay.
Yeah, they got that hardcore connection, so... Mm.
Yeah, and it was, I mean, Mikey's been good in this role, but I think they're trying to up the star power a bit and mix this up a little. Not that Cairo's a big star, but you know, he's out there.
Sandman.
All right, Joey's in the nest. He's wrapping us up. He reveals that Cactus and Tommy Dreamer will now team against Sandman and Cairo. So you should just be happy Cairo's hanging around at Holiday Hill, too.
Yeah.
We then hear from a very bloody Cactus and Tommy backstage. Cactus says, despite all this, he can smile because Sandman and Cairo have no clue what they've gotten into. Cactus earned his reputation by putting good wrestlers out of the sport for enjoyment. Now they did the nicest thing they could do. They gave Cactus a reason. Dreamer already had one. Cactus puts Dreamer over his extreme and tough and says no one should ever doubt him again. He won't sleep a wink tonight. He won't shower because he wants to remember every single swing and wants to be reminded of victory. He doesn't give a damn about body parts because the more losses, the less he has to lose. Dreamer's no pretty boy. He's a man, and he earned the guts, and Sandman and Cairo can't take that away. Cactus wants their souls, and that's that. Amazing promo, intense and focused. And he told a really nice story to leverage the Sullivan guest spot into the Sandman Cactus issue via Woman. And it's a good way to keep legitimizing Dreamer 2, which I guess is another reason why this team works. So, yeah, I like this promo. That was an awesome close and hard sell, final sell for Holiday Hill.
Yeah, Cactus with the caked blood and steel. And he wants a taste of steel and the caked blood. Very intense. And Dreamer kind of just standing there, but looking mean. That's it.
Yeah, good. I mean, don't let him ruin the genius that is Cactus when he's doing one of these promos. Like, just don't go like too cold and ruin it. Like, he keeps his mouth shut like he should.
All right. So, I mean, not much match-wise in the show, but the promos and the hard sell for Holiday Hell were great all through the show, which is obviously the goal. So, best match, I mean, there was none. So, I just went NA. Mm-hmm. Worst match, I threw 9-1-1 Dragons in there, which is a squash.
Yeah, same.
Best moment, I went with the two big promos, Douglas's and Cactus's.
And Paulie's chest hair.
I like the PE one, where they said, "Our pop is a pimp. Gotta make a living."
The most 90s, I went with Joey's trade deficit jokes, Johnny Grunge's White Sox toque, and the John Bobbitt reference.
Yeah, Paulie with the Menendez and the Bobbitt reference. Yeah.
Tommy's backwards hat. Cairo, that is, not Dreamer.
And Stock Rising. I went Douglas, Simmons, Sandman, and Cactus.
And Tommy.
Yeah. Cactus, definitely.
Stock falling out with the Dragons and the Princess Angel.
Oh, come on.
What? Come on.
My sweet angel.
Virgin Princess Angel.
So you get for shitting on the pit bulls all those weeks. Payback.
I went with old Dragons.
The Dragons.
They might be the worst. I mean, there's some jobbers here, but they might be the worst of the worst.
Right, now.
All right. Another strong episode. I went 6.5 out of 10 here.
Me too.
Nah, not as high. 5.5. Probably the disappointment that we didn't get to see more of that Dreamer and Peaches mixed tag.
Yeah, I just thought they nailed the build and the hype for Holiday Hell. So.
Oh, yeah. Definitely the promos were on point, but not much as far as wrestling, as far as in-ring action.
All right. Well, that'll do it here tonight for this Extreme Three-Way Dance, and we are on the verge of Holiday Hell. We're not going to see it, sadly, but we will see a lot of the clips and fallout next week, next episode, I should say. So in 2 weeks' time, we'll be back on this feed, but we're going to take a little detour. It's our 20th episode, and we're going to treat you guys. We're going to go off the timeline for a minute, and then after that, 2 weeks from there, we'll get back to this, and we'll wrap up 94 and head into 1995. Jenny, anything you want to plug?
Just follow me at Jenny Position. I'm really good in small doses, so that really works for Twitter. You can also find me on the Facebook page at Jenny Position. And check out what the feed has. We should have an episode of Talking Pop up there for you right now.
Johnny?
Not much going on besides this during these times.
Well, you can hear lots of stuff here on the North South Connection podcast feed. We had a new No Holds Bar drop over the weekend, and that was Aaron and I ranking all the WrestleManias. Good thing we did that before everything got canceled, and I didn't feel like talking about WrestleMania, so that was good.
Mm-hmm.
Chad and I also had a new Wrestling Warzone drop last week, looking at Raw Nitro from February 26th, and had a pod blast on Monday this week. Jacob Williams and I did a GWCW Project live watch. We talked Ricky Steamboat versus Rick Rude from Beach Blast 1992. So lots to go on this feed, lots dropping each and every week. Be sure to keep an eye out. Follow us on social media, facebook.com/NorthSouthConnection. Follow us on Twitter, at JT the Pod Guy. And just subscribe and share and rate, please, as we continue to get this feed off the ground. So for Jonifer, I'm JT. We're out. Everyone stay extreme. We'll talk to you in a couple weeks. Hiding in a hiding place where no one ever goes. Put it in your pantry with your cupcakes. It's a little secret, just a Robinson's affair. Most of all, you got to hide it from the kids. Mrs. Robinson, Jesus loves you more than you will know. Whoa, whoa, whoa. God bless you, please, Mrs. Robinson. Heaven holds a place for those who pray. Hey, hey, hey. Hey, hey, hey. Sitting on a sofa on a Sunday afternoon. Going to a candidate's debate.
laugh about it, shout about it when you got to choose. Every way you look at it, you lose.